keeping your IT team sharp isn't optional, it's essential. CBT Nuggets delivers high-quality IT training led by real-world experts who know what teams actually need on systems teams will actually use. Whether it's staying current on cloud, networking, or security, CBT Nuggets makes training simple, effective, and scalable. No fluff, no wasted time, just smarter, faster IT teams. Thousands of companies trust CBT Nuggets, and yours can too. Go to cbtnuggets.com/solutions and start training today.
This is Triathlon Therapy with your host, Danny McKenna, professional athlete and coach, Tim Reed, and...
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Welcome to the show, Joe Gambles, otherwise known as the Weathered Vegan. Joe is was a very good triathlete. He has multiple Ironman 70.3 wins, an Ironman victory, other Ironman podiums, including Asia Pac Champs. Were you second or third at Asia Pac Champs?
Second.
Second with that one, yeah. Probably the one of the only negatively split marathons I've ever seen. You also had a world championship podium that many people don't know about. I know about it because you pushed me off the podium. I ended up getting fifth that day, but should have been fourth. We all remember the reasons, but I remember that third that day. All round great guy, longtime friend, and more excitingly, joining the RPG coaching team. But that's not just why I'm having you on. Thanks for coming on, Joe.
You're very welcome, Reedy. It's my pleasure. Big fan of the show. As of last week, when you asked me to come on, I thought I should listen to all the podcasts. And that got me through my long run of like 3 hours the other day. I pretty much just listened to one high speed.
That's a straight up lie. You just said before you've listened to 1.5 episodes. I've only listened to one episode myself.
I listened to the first one and I was like, wow, the bar's really low. Yep. And then the last one, I listened to last week's and I was like, wow, they've really got this dialed now. And now I should definitely go on the show. Even though I haven't had an invite till now. So,
yeah. Steve will also be joining us. He is classically late and I just can't. I just thought we'll just, oh, here he is. Oh, damn it. He was going to prove me wrong. We'll just get started and see what happens. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Nice. We've got Benny Hill joining us. A lot of people don't know who Ben is. He actually got 13th in Nice at the Ironman World Championships on the weekend. Was it 13th? Jeez, I should have
13th,
checked.
Yeah.
Which is impressive because he's done like 3 or 4 triathlons. But cool history. I had a chat to one of his mates to get some content for the show. Interesting guest coming on. Joe, tell me what you're up to these days.
Come on. Well, actually, we're still in Boulder, Colorado. Been here for 16 years now. I came here just to check it out in 08 and I haven't left. But actually, exciting news is they're actually moving back to Australia at the end of the year. So lots to organize, packing up the family and moving back to Melbourne. So excited to be there just after Christmas this year. But at the moment, I'm coaching. Commentating. Whenever they're really desperate, they give me a call and I just cruise down the road 5 minutes and make it up as I go along, as you've probably witnessed some of the commentary.
I've heard really good things about the commentary. I've only just started watching triathlon again. I used to pretend for quite a while that I was keeping up to date. But I've heard really good things.
Even if at these last minutes, that's happened a couple of times, but most of the time I do know. This year I've actually had at least like 6 months notice of when I'm going to commentate. So, but I do enjoy looking through all the athletes and getting to know some of the ones I don't know. Definitely, I haven't raced obviously for 2 years, and yeah, there's so many new names, and it's exciting to see all these new young guys just popping up. But I come with very well prepared, and then I turn up next to Matt Liedo. And he's like, oh, can you just send me that that document you've spent hours preparing? And I guess I just share it with him. And then he just basically rips off everything that I've researched. Which is
So tell me how it works. You guys go into a studio in Boulder for the Ironman Live team. And you just pull an all-nighter when it's overseas?
Yeah. They're the ones I get because the top dogs, DD, Michael, they won't do an overnighter at this point, really. So an all-nighter with Ironman is, that's pretty full on. So depending on where it is, like if it's Europe, so the 8 hours in front, we'll start coverage at 11 p.m. Boulder time and then go through till the sun comes up and probably another couple of hours after that. So it's definitely, if I went back and watched some of the recordings, there's definitely a few lulls, but hopefully you don't have that same bad patch as the other commentator, because it is, you go straight through the night and it's basically coffee and cashews is basically what I get through 10-hour commentary. So I enjoy it, but you're wrecked for 2-3 days. But
it's a bit like when I used to go riding with you, though. Like the conversation would be nonstop for 3 or 4 hours, totally wrecked afterwards, and you'd be eating cashews. but no, I think you're doing a good job on that. I hope that they keep you coming on board. I think with the Ironman coverage, sometimes I think they feel this necessity to commentate the whole time. And I actually think, especially if we were able to get more cameras on what's happening further back, like when it's just focused on one person, it's a real tough job for the commentator. Like if we're just watching Laidlaw for the entirety of the coverage, there's only so much you can say. But if you flash back and you see two guys battling it out in fifth and sixth, suddenly then this conversation would flow, obviously.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think Matt Liotta is very good at this. He's very good at actually not saying anything and just letting the feed sort of speak volumes. And some of the shots that they're getting out there, especially if you watched the Nice coverage last weekend, you don't really need to say much. And we can sort of learn a lot from the guys that commentate like the Tour de France and that. They don't need to fill every second with talking. It's 9 hours. It's quite nice to not actually hear someone talk the whole time and just sort of enjoy watching a race. But as you said, if it was possible, like they do have some other motos out there. Obviously, they're always going to have one on the first guy, first male or female athlete. But like for it, use Lionel Sanders as an example. Like if you had a pet moto on him, from out the swim all the way as you're ripping through the field, then that's a lot to talk about, and it's sort of exciting racing. But they're getting there. It's definitely, I think it's improving.
Sure.
It's great that we get so much coverage of the 70.3 races, and we're covering the Melbourne race in November this year, which is pretty cool as well.
So how did you find, I love to talk about this because I didn't find it super easy, but the transition into not racing, were you cocaine and strippers, or were you more just depressing at home reading books?
I can't read, Reedy. You know this. My last race was the World Champs in St. George 2 years ago. And the first few weeks were tough, but that was more, I just sort of couldn't stop analyzing the race, how it was like I had the worst swim of my career on my last ever race. But once I got through that, honestly, I was ready. I'd been racing. I did my first pro race when I was 16, and I'm 41 now. So I retired just before I turned 40. And I was ready to do other things. And it was pretty, within a month, I was feeling pretty good. And we're lucky here in Boulder. I was out running trails with my dog and just out, just enjoying myself. And I didn't feel like I needed to train 20, 25 hours a week. I was quite happy getting out the door for a 30-minute jog sometimes. Maybe I wasn't quite as addicted as I thought I was to training. I'm enjoying. I have to get out most days and do something, even if it's a 15, 20-minute jog. But the transition's been pretty good, but still obviously very heavily involved in the sport. So,
Steve, sorry, you haven't got a word in yet, but
Steve here. I thought he'd left. Okay. No. Sorry, Steve.
No, I muted myself again because as soon as I got back in, Winnie had followed me and she'd been banging on the door until about 30 seconds ago and screamed.
That's all right. Benny Hills just joined us. Benny, welcome aboard. Sorry, as expected, we got started about 10 minutes too late. So we were going to go a bit more through the race before we had a chat to you. But seeing as you're here, welcome. What a crazy expedited journey you've had in triathlon. First of all, just what a ride. How long have you been doing triathlon? It hasn't been long at all. All right. And you just had a 13th place, for listeners that don't know you, at the Ironman World Championships. Sort of surprised everyone. I think first Australian across the line. Congratulations. Yeah. Tell me a bit about the journey.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on. The I guess it was before Port Macquarie last year. About 6 weeks before that, my mate was like, he'd started doing triathlon. We were teammates as cyclists, and he sort of converted over, and he convinced me to come and do a triathlon with him. And I did a bit of like swimming and running as a kid, but I was like, that sounds like fun. So I joined him there, and I won my age group and was like third overall. And I had a great time. I was like, this is a lot of fun. And so after that, I kind of, those 6 weeks, I did a little bit of swimming and running in prep. And then from then on, I was like, oh, this is something I want to do more of, and sort of got into it from that point. So it's been like about a year and a half since I started training for triathlon. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yo, that's nearly better than yours and my Ironman World Championship results. He's done for a year and a half.
I wasn't going to mention that, Reedy, but anyway, I was going to sort of skim over that fact. Yeah, well done, Benny. Amazing performance there. Yeah, so it's obviously goes to show having that cycling background, especially coming to a race like Nice, just really set you up for a really great, great race. And off the back of that, just a stellar run after, I think your marathon in Port was over 3 hours, and then to come out and have an amazing bike ride and ride from not the greatest position out of the water to then put together an amazing ride and match some of the best riders in the sport and then get off and run a 2:48. I'd love to see your training. If you could just send that over, that'll be absolutely amazing. Thank you.
Mate, you also, like, people might not know this, but you've got quite a prestigious cycling background. You actually rode with Pogacar in one of your teams, can you tell us about, I guess, what it was like racing and training with him? And what, you know, what triggered you to stop cycling? Or I don't know if you've even stopped. Are you still racing cycling? What's the go?
I guess I started cycling when I was like 17, and from then till I was 29, I was like trying to be a cyclist and trying to make the world tour. And I had a lot of went through a few teams there, and it was 2018, I was teammates with Pogacar in a Slovenian continental team. And I was like, that was my first like full-time season in Europe, and I was struggling a little bit to find my feet, but I had a few like results. I was leading the Tour of Slovenia, and I was in the leader's jersey, and Pogacar's in the white jersey, and it was like he was a super talent, but also just the nicest guy and happy to help me. Like, he was giving me lead outs when we're in like a small group sprint together and things like that, because I was a faster sprinter than he was, but like he probably could have got a result himself, but just happy if anyone else on the team wanted to put their hand up for anything, he was like happy to help. But we had like a team coach that year, and we basically did all our sessions together, and everyone on the team would do the same training, but he was obviously just naturally more talented than us, because it wasn't any special training he was doing, he was just a lot better than us. And at the same time, there was people a lot worse on the team. Like, Slovenia doesn't have a big pool of cyclists, so you throw the same training at a bunch of guys, and some people are really good and some people are not so good. And it was just like, it was an awesome experience to see him excel. But I even then didn't know at that point what he would go on to do. Like, I knew he was good, but I didn't know he was that good.
Yeah, well, that's all we really want to talk to you about was Pogacar, so thanks for that. No, mate, I should ask you, I mean, what's it like being the second most talented person in your own little circle? I mean, is it your wife or your girlfriend is also a super elite athlete?
My wife. Well, all these jerseys in the background, these world champs jerseys and stuff, that's not my wife. That's not me.
Love it.
Yeah, she was world champion for the individual pursuit on the track. So, and like silver medal at Com Games, and yeah, she like national criterium champion, and she had a lot of she was a bit very successful. So, I've always been kind of looking up to her. And I think that's really helped in her support of me, because I sort of picked up triathlon as a hobby post cycling for a bit of fun. And then I've had success at that. And having her behind me, having had success before, she's really encouraged me to like do this and do this at a high level. And she's really supportive of that, because she sees high performance and like she's enjoying being on that journey as well.
So is Rebecca, does she still train much now, or just?
No, I think she never really loved the training. She loved the success of it. And now not having that like Olympic dream in mind, just doing it for the fun of doing it isn't as motivating for her. So she does exercise a bit. She's doing park run there for a while and still is involved in a bit of Zwift racing and things, but she really doesn't do it as much as she'd probably like, or she's just doesn't have that motivation anymore.
I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I was looking at those jerseys thinking, if his first tour was in 2018, he's squeezed a lot of success into a COVID period.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a really interesting story. And yeah, it's great that, your wife gets it and can support you now, because looks like you're just getting started. I did look at some of your cycling, just the races you've done recently, and I saw leading into Port Mac, you actually did a couple of races that are really well known, especially in Australia, the Melbourne to Warrnambool Classic, which is 265 kilometres, and Grafton to Inverell Classic. That was like a week out, I think, from Port Mac. Was that like your last sort of big session? Obviously, you did very well. You were sixth and eighth in both of those races. So did you use those as prep? And obviously, you feel very comfortable with, like someone like a Cam Worth that can just ride at those Ironman watts all day. Yeah.
Yeah, I still race for like a NRS team, Blackshaw. So I do some NRS race with that, and I've always enjoyed the long one day races, so I get excited about the Melbourne to Warrnambool and Grafton Inverell. So I was torn between like Port Mac I wanted to do well at, but I also wanted to do well at Grafton, so I was like, I think I should be able to balance both. And a week out doing that race, I think I don't think it took anything away from my Port Mac ride. I actually felt particularly good at Port Mac. It's a bit of a balancing act, but I've struggled a lot going to triathlon with injuries running. I get, I feel like I have a good engine, but my body can't handle any kind of load really. So I was injured going into Port Mac. I hadn't really done much running. So
okay.
I was basically bike training and just hoping to hang on in the run. So the build up to Grafton was my prep for Port Mac. And then I had a good bike at Port and not a good run.
I don't remember seeing. Steve, how did your bike and Benny's bike match up?
I don't know. I think he definitely closed a gap from the swim, because we had no one near us. And then we turned back to go back to town with like 20K left. And we see this one random rider. It was obviously Benny Hill. And we were like, who the fuck's just started catching up? There was no one in sight. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Ben, you would know probably. I haven't looked.
Oh, you outrode all you drafting fuckers. So, that's pretty good.
Did you,
without a lead moto, everything, he outrode you guys by 5 minutes. What are you doing?
You can blame Burks. He was pushing most there.
he should have rode. Burks always gets that.
He should have rode harder. Yeah. So Benny, I've got an interesting question for me anyways. You were preparing for a cycling race, but you still managed to ride well in a TT position at Port Mac. So did you do much TT work, or did that get in the way of cycling prep?
I think I've always felt like I've adapted quickly to my time trial position on the bike. I don't spend a lot. I actually don't like spending too much time on time trial bike. I started to get, I don't know if it's a saddle I use or whatever, but I get like saddle sores. And if I'm on the time trial bike too much, I get a bit uncomfortable. So even Like, even in my ideal prep, I'd probably only be on the time trial bike once or twice a week. So I still did that in the lead up to the Port. Into Grafton, I'd still do one or two that, like, I'd do a threshold workout on the time trial bike and maybe like a 3-hour ride just in the time trial position during the week. And then that was, I feel like the crossover worked pretty well between the two. I could still prepare as I wanted to for Grafton, and that was enough. That's all I really wanted to do in that position for Port anyway.
You know, Cam Worth sounds says very similar.
Sorry. Yeah, I guess Cam Worth, and that brings me back to Sebastian Kinlay. Hardly, like, literally, I think would ride twice, maybe once a week on his time trial bike. And if that bike came out of the garage, it was like full gas. Like, it was race stuff. It was higher than race pace effort. And then he'd do all his base pretty much on the road bike. And Cam Worth, obviously, look at the Pro Tour guys. I know they only time trial for an hour, but they don't spend much time on the TT bikes at all. But it's a little bit different time trialing 180 kilometers. But Cam Worth and Sebastian Kinlay come to mind for that, works really well. So I wouldn't change a thing. And I think it's probably better for your body too.
Hey, getting into the weeds a bit on that, Benny, do you run your road bike position? Do you run the saddle quite far forward to sort of, is it a fairly similar load?
I have both saddles pushed as far forward as possible. And I did a 2 weeks before, a week before I left for Nice, I did the New South Wales State time trial here. And the seat was like just a little bit too far forward for the UCI position. So I don't think it's that extreme, because it still was nearly 5 mil behind the bottom bracket. It's just the geometry of the bike. I probably would go further forward if I could.
Yeah, it's one of
just
my
flip the seat post around. Hey, Reedy.
Yeah, but I'm just puzzled as to why the bike industry is not changing the geometry of road bikes. Everyone's running the seat as far forward as possible. Let's give people more range and sort that out. Mate, you mentioned your wife, Rebecca. She, you know, loved the success of racing. And probably not so much the training. Would you say you're the reverse of that, in that you just froth on the training?
Yeah, well, I really enjoy racing as well. But as I got through my cycling career further and further, at the end of 2017, I broke my back in a crash. And 2018, I crashed 13 times through the season. I just feel like I couldn't get my confidence back. I was more of a sprinter on the bike. In 2018 particularly, I was trying to sprint a lot and like bumping bars and fighting position. I was crashing a lot and I felt like I couldn't get enough confidence back to sort of get in the race again. And for that reason, I was like not loving the racing. I was like, I much prefer to just do a good training block and sort of get fit. And I do love the analysis of training. I'm a cycling coach as well. So I love the numbers behind it and like seeing the physiology adapt and like actually getting a good solid block of training in so I can see the numbers going up. So I love that process and don't miss the crashing. And so like triathlon's really been great for that, because I can like do lots of good solid blocks and then like sort of test myself every 3-6 months or however long I want to do a race. But I think that's a good balance of racing to training for me. I don't want to race too often these days anymore.
Fair enough. Speaking of, not crashing, how, let's relate it back to Nice a little bit. Obviously, you rode very, very well there. Got out of the water 55 minutes, something around 53, was it? It was a little bit, you had some work to do. But how much time did you pull out of people, do you think, on the descents? And was it technical compared to what you have raced as a bike racer? And in that, how did you go on the time trial bike on that sort of terrain? Because obviously you're used to probably doing those descents on a road bike. So obviously you did very well, but how did you find it?
Yeah, I felt like I pushed hard the first 60K of the bike, where most of the uphill climbing was. But I lost 8 minutes to Cam Worth in the first 60K. And I thought I was riding hard, but I could have gone harder, but I was like, still like, there's a lot of racing still to do. So I didn't want to go, like, my threshold was about 370, 380, and I was riding like 330 up the climb. So maybe I could have done an extra like 20, 30 watts up the climb and still held on. But I was like, I was riding, there was another guy I was with, and he was sort of, looked like we're catching people. So I wasn't too worried. I thought we were doing a decent pace. But then to realize we'd lost so much time, I was like, oh dear, I probably should have stepped on it a bit harder up there. I mean, the way it panned out in the end, I'm happy with how I paced it. So I'm not too, maybe I would like at some point to sort of step on the bike and send it at the start and see what happens. Because I've only done two now and I've taken a pretty conservative approach. Like, a port was the same. I think Steve and the front guys had put a lot of time into me in the first bit of the bike because I wasn't confident. I'd never done like a 5-hour time trial before. I didn't know what I could hold. So I was kind of sitting to zone two being like, this is what I can hold. And then finishing last hour, the first hour I'm doing it 260, last hour I'm doing it like 330 because I'm like, oh, I'm still feeling good. And that's when I like made a lot of time back. So maybe I need to like reassess where my strengths are.
To port next year, do you hear that numbers and go, yeah, no, just to keep doing what you're doing, just zone two all the way. And yeah, just do that for port next year. Or you're like, no, don't step on it.
Well, yeah, I came out of the water at port, I think 7 minutes behind Steve's group. And I'm like, I'm not going to catch that back. If I ride threshold for an hour, I'm still not going to catch 7 minutes on them and then I'll be dead. So I'm like, I have to treat this like a try and like negative split a 4.5-hour time trial and do my best effort because I'm not really racing these guys. I'm just racing for my best time. And I think overall that's probably what I was doing. But if I got out of the water like 2 minutes down, maybe I'd be like a Matt Burton or someone who like is like, I'm going to try and ride to the front of the race and then race the race. But I don't feel like I'm in that position yet because I'm coming out so far of the water behind. So I'm like, I'll just do my time trial.
I think it's a smart way to do it because the group, if there is a group, we tend to slow down significantly with 30 or 40K to go. Everyone starts looking at each other. And I can remember my last 20K at Port Mac, maybe actually my last 30 was probably only 230 watts. So it was real low. Everyone was just getting to the front and looking around like, I don't want to do this. So every time I went to the front, I was pushing less power as well because I knew we were so far ahead and we would just think about each other at that point and can I outrun these guys? But yeah, at the start, the average was probably more like 275 for the whole until then. And then Busselton being alone, it's very different. If you're alone, like me and Maxie and Burton, we're all alone. I think my power only dropped to 260 from 270. So it was a very different approach that day. But like, I think in Port Mac with those hills and stuff, I was kind of relieved that we're only pushing way lower power anyway. It felt pathetic, but you know, you just race. So I think what you're gonna, yeah, so the inside tip, if there's a group, just do exactly what you've done and you will put about 10 minutes into us in the last 10k.
And then probably Benny, execute your best run as well, I yeah would say.
Benny, your bigger bike training days are pretty legendary. I've heard stories of like 5 hours in the morning and then going and doing a crit in the Arvo, you know, totaling up to 8 hours on the bike for a big day. When you say you're getting injured running, what was your running looking like? What was your sort of bigger run weeks leading into World Champs?
So I did, 2 months before Worlds, Port Mac, I was injured. And so I started that run, I was hobbling, taking my bike into transition the day before Port Mac. And I was like, this is probably not how you want to be approaching your first Ironman. But I sort of managed to hold on for that. But then I spent the next, I think I had like 10 days off running after Port Mac. And then from then I was like, felt injury free and building from there. And 2 months before Nice, I was in Singapore for the Olympic Esports Cycling Series because I was racing, I was representing Australia for Zwift over there and we couldn't bring our bikes. So I was in Singapore for a week and we just had the one, like 2 days on the ergo for the actual event. And then I was just there running for the week and I got a bit carried away because I had so much time. So I ran 90K that week, but I was so like, I could feel everything was on the edge. Like my hips were tight, my adductors were tight. And I was like, okay, I might have overdone it. So then I went back to like, I think I did like 15K that next week. And I built up again to about 70K total running as my biggest run week post that. And I really only did one day a week where I'd run 4 minute pace, which was like my idea of what race pace was, but I didn't really know what race pace was, but I thought maybe 4 minutes was a good aim. So I'll do one day a week where I'll do race pace, and then the rest of it's just running what felt comfortable. And some days that was 5 minutes, some days that was 4:30 pace, just whatever I felt was comfortable pace.
Two more questions before we let you go. First one, do you eat meat?
Yeah, I love meat. I eat a lot of meat.
See, Joe, this is where you fell short, mate. You could have had a top 15 at World Champs.
But think of all the animals I've saved. I might be the weathered vegan, but like, come on.
What's next? Oh, the other question was, do all your cyclist mates just call you a nerd now that you're doing triathlon? Like, are you copping much shit?
Well, I think because Aiden, my mate, also, we're two of the better cyclists around in Canberra, and we've both started doing triathlon, and we both still win the local criteriums here quite regularly. So I don't think we cop too much, and I think the triathletes are actually loving it because they used to cop it, and now we're doing. Yeah. They're like they're being treated a lot nicer. So
yeah,
not really, not at all.
Generally, for my era, cyclists do not like triathletes at all. But now. When you've got guys like Cam Worth and yourself and sort of being out doing that crossover, then I feel like triathlon's getting a little bit more respect.
I always thought from the outside looking in at both these sports. I mean, let's not compare. They're both nerdy as hell. So.
They really are, yeah.
Hey, Ben, we really appreciate you coming on. I think that it's pretty exciting what you could do in the next couple of years. So we'll be watching on with interest, and don't beat Steve next year.
I just hope I can see the front of the race at one of these triathlons, because I'm always losing so much in the swim. I can't even catch back in the bike. So, which doesn't really give me much of a chance because they all run faster than me. But my goal is just to see the front of the race at some point at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you will. So thanks heaps, mate. We will speak again, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Benny. That was great.
Cheers, mate.
See ya.
What did you think of the course?
That was spectacular. Yeah. It was a little tough to watch it here in Boulder because the start, I think, was at 11 o'clock at night. So I caught live the first 2 hours and then the last hour of the marathon or something. But I went back and watched it on YouTube, and I was, really impressed. And it just, it was just, the coverage was really, I think Ironman did a really good job, and it was just really well supported. And I think it felt like a world championship. And from the people that actually were there on the ground that I've been in touch with, they had a great time. Like Matt Liotto stayed on another week because he was enjoying being in the Nice so much. I think it is a worthy world championship. And obviously it's got a huge history in the sport as well. So I think, it came off really well, and it was an amazing world championship.
Steve, Sam Laidlow taking the win. Any thoughts watching him take the win?
I don't know, really. We were having a few beers when we saw it happening. Oh, you weren't, were you? You were
no.
There.
6 weeks after, going strong.
After I spiked all those alcohol-free drinks that you had.
He's done that to me before.
we were watching it. I was shocked. I don't know if I should be skeptical or not on anything. It's as you said earlier, Reedy. He's grown up on these types of rides and knows how to ride them, and I used Caleb. I just went swimming and thought more about it after our conversation. And, Caleb Noble, he's in good form at the moment, pushing good power. I was training with him in Davos, and he lost 7 minutes to a French guy up that mountain, up and down that mountain in Davos for Challenge Davos. And yeah, I think they just know how to ride these hills, like you said, and they know how to descend them. They know how to hold power on top and over the hill. And it's a, yeah, I just look at it and I go, this course is never anything I'll be successful on. I would lose 10 minutes up and 20 minutes down.
I
did some research on Sam after he won. Because I've always said no one, especially in Ironman, no one comes from nowhere. So you looked at Benny Hill, huge aerobic base, years and years of 5-6 hour training days. Sam is only 24, but his training age is about the same as a lot of athletes who are winning at 32, 33. He moved to the Pyrenees when he was 2. I think he started triathlon by the time he was 4 or 5. He's done the work. He's put those years in and he's trained on the French climbs for most of his triathlon life. So I'm not, initially I was like, what the hell, a 24 year old winning world champs, that just doesn't happen, youngest person ever. And then when I did some more reading up, I was like, ah, it always makes sense, like this is set up for him to win this race. I also think, you as you know, Joe, people tend to peak 10 to 15 years into their training age, and then they get sort of 5-6 years at the top, and then it tends to drop off unless you're Jan Frodeno. And I'll be interested to see how long his career is, because yeah, peaking, I think being so young, there's only so long you can put yourself through Ironman events. Thoughts on the longevity of his career?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Yeah, 24 is so young. But yeah, as you said, he's lived and breathed triathlon. All his family, his girlfriend, everyone, it's a whole family team that he has behind him. And it seems like he's had that from a very young age. So yeah, it does make more sense. But look, we've always said, even when I raced in Europe years and years ago, that to try and beat the French in France is really, really difficult. They bring their A game. I think we had 5 French guys in the top 15, which everyone said, like they said, there'll probably be 4 or 5 guys in the top 10. And that's what happened. And yeah, just that experience. We saw the coverage of him descending. Like, there's nothing like that. Even in Colorado, where a lot of other pros live, and good like Chris Leiferman and Sang Long, guys like that, they can't descend like that. I'm sorry. Like, there's
the descents, just the descents different are different level in Boulder. They're yeah, much easier.
They are much easier. And it is, it's like an art how they descend these mountains. They ride the course and they know how to hold speed. They hold momentum, and that over 180 kilometer time trial just adds up. And the energy saving, but also the speed they're able to carry and the momentum, you can just see he was ready to execute. He'd spent like so much time on that course. You could see it by the way. He knew every bend.
I mean, I guess in the lead up to Steve, we saw he was a bit sick at some of the PTO races, had COVID, but we've also seen that play out for a lot of athletes quite well at World Champs, because we know half the pro field go in overcooked. Sebi Kinley won, you know, with a run injury where he was barely running before he won his world champs. Crowe spent half the year sick and not well before he set the course record in Kona. So sometimes I think these guys with the massive base, those little interruptions, we saw it even with you, Steve, going into Ironman Australia. Sometimes these interruptions can actually stop the athlete from overcooking their training going into the race.
Yeah, I never thought avoiding childcare would actually be my downfall this year. We got away, didn't get sick for 6 weeks, and I overtrained.
I was going to ask that, Steve. Yeah, did you get sick? Did you get any niggles, or you just had a really great build into Worlds, and then it was already left in training, I guess, at that point? Some of those setbacks are great. Like, you've always said that, Reedy. You need a blowout 10 days out. And just to reset.
An injury blowout. I meant like a night out.
Yeah, I know. He's like, hey, let's go out. I'm like, it's 10 days out, Reedy. I'm like, yeah, I have my best races off 10 days out.
Off 10 days out. Forced rest.
We really must talk about Jan Frodeno. Hard to argue that there's anyone greater in the sport over the history of the whole entire sport. Like, just an amazing career. 2 times Ironman 70.3 world champ. 3 times Ironman world champ, Olympic champion, gold medal at giving every other pro triathlete an eating disorder. he is something special. And in some poetic justice way, I'm sort of not for his sake, it would have been nice to see him go out on top, but Ironman always wins. It always kicks everyone's ass in the end. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was just, it's just the way Ironman is. You know, if he'd won that last Ironman he did, I would have been like, geez, even, you know, it was almost too perfect. And I think it just shows that Ironman always defeats you in the end, even though he's obviously been on top of the world.
I think I saw a clip about, he posted something about that in one of his many, many interviews, that, yeah, it was sort of fitting that he had beat him on this final race, because he has spent a lot of time at the very, very top and really unbeatable. And if you look back 4 weeks ago after racing in Wisconsin at the PTO race, like I was like, who's going to beat him? There's no way. But he just, I think some of the people, as I said, like I've been in touch with on the ground, like, he didn't seem to have that fire in the few days leading to the race, that confidence, that real, like, just, I'm going to rip everyone apart. He seemed very just content, which I think he said this in an interview as well. It's good as a human being to be like that, but it's not good as a racer. And he's not, I don't think he's hungry like he maybe was once. And even he looked like he maybe had a niggle as well. The bike sort of flared up something. I don't know what exactly, but he definitely got off that bike pretty not in a great position physically.
Any other performances of note, Steve, that you'd want to mention? Patrick Lang, pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't follow the race closely, so I wish I did now that I'm in this podcast and the main topic is knees. I also didn't read messages that you sent about what this podcast was going to be involving.
Well, ask me, really.
but yeah, Patrick Lang was incredible. That's all I can say about his run. It's something to strive for. I know I can run as fast as that, but off that bike is incredible to do 230s. It's whenever someone's doing these things, more people do. So that's great, because I hope a few of us in this sport lift our bike and our run, because of, it's just what you see. And as Sam Laidlow says, believe, cheers, perceive. What does he say?
I feel like you should have written that down, Steve.
Believe, perceive, achieve.
It's really true. I want to make note of Brad Weiss. Like, I think he's definitely on people's radar that know the sport really well. I've spent a lot of time with Brad and calling him, and definitely a close friend of mine. And it was amazing to see him execute. Finally made that, like, he's an amazing swimmer in the pool and never really capitalized that in the open water. And like, I'll give you full credit here, Reedy. I messaged him before the race. I said, wear your sleeves down. First time he's ever done it. I've been telling him for years because you told me. And he finally did and made that front pack and just set him up for a great race. And despite a 5-minute penalty, comes away with a 7th place and just an amazing performance. So full credit to Brad. He definitely puts in the work, that guy.
You should not have brought up the sleeves up or down thing. Hey, Steve, sore topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never, ever, ever do that. And was convinced that there was no other way.
So right before 70.3 Worlds, Steve got talked into having his sleeves over his shoulders, which he'd never done before. And what was the sensations like?
It was, but I felt it in the warm up. Got out and I was like, oh, I'll quickly just do this. And then I was getting convinced. No, keep it like that. I was like, oh fuck. And I just went through the race as if I was doing a strength effort with a lactate of like 1,000.
I remember Reedy told me Oceanside, I turned up and I'd put in a big winter of swimming and blew to pieces in the first 200 meters. And I'm like, and then I'd managed to find some good feet, I thought, and got up, got out of the water. I knew I was in the first pack, got out of the water. I was on Lionel Sanders' feet. I'm like, that's not a good swim.
But it
was awful. It felt like a gorilla had jumped on my back. And Reedy, like after the race, like, oh, that was the easiest swim in the world. I got on Apo's feet, piece of cake, mate. I'm like,
I think it depends on your suit as well. So the advice isn't that bad if it's someone who has a loose suit, but mine is like it's got those aero stripes now. So it's like the tightest upper body that you could find in a suit. So yeah, the advice isn't terrible for some, from some, if they've got a suit that's like stretchy, but mine is, yeah, so especially when it gets wet, it's just horrible.
Well, you won't make that mistake again, I guess.
No.
Mm. I have a question for you guys. So the top 10 from this year, obviously in Nice, do you think this could be the top 10 in Kona next year? Or do you think there'll be guys that maybe wouldn't make that top 10 or there, and there'll be guys that definitely would be more in the mix?
Radio. Yeah. I think we'll have the same answer.
I think it's going to differ. I think there'll be some guys that will be up there. There's going to be some guys who just can't descend with those guys in Nice. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guys that are still really strong in terms of power output will do well in Kona. So I love that it's rotating. I think it mixes it up, keeps it exciting. I'd love to see even more courses get mixed in, but at the moment you can't really argue with those two courses as being, you know, exciting, tough, fair, all those things.
Okay. One more question for you, Reedy. Will the Angry Gnome maybe come out of, well, you're not even retired, and race, maybe get a knee spot in 2 years' time?
100% no. I'll never do an Ironman again. If I do come back, if after I get my heart fixed, it'll be to win local sprint triathlons and be a local legend.
I'll take you on. Let's pick one in 2 years, Reedy, and let's race each other. It'd be great. But you're not allowed to swim train. No swimming allowed.
It's funny when you're out of it for a while, you're like, just that constant, oh, I've got one more session to do today. It's just that, and that fatigue, like I just enjoy being able to talk to people and not fall asleep while I'm talking to them. So, yeah.
I get it. No, it's nice to actually have clarity in your thought.
So anyway. Joe, I've got a question for you, just going back to something I was interested in. The 90s.
Okay.
probably. So
we're not that old.
We were chatting about age in the sport. And you said you've been doing it a long time. What age did you actually start?
Did my first triathlon when I was 12. My dad did triathlon and I just ended up doing a kids triathlon and loved it. And that's pretty much switched me over from running pretty quickly because I wasn't, I don't know. I love my running, but I wasn't getting anywhere with it when I was like 14, 15. So I switched to triathlon and just embraced it. I raced my first pro race. I got a wild card into the Devonport Triathlon when I was 16 and got to race Miles Stewart, Greg Welsh, Macca, Crowey, everyone. Like it was, I got smashed, but it was a great opportunity. Then went to junior elite racing and just, kept chipping away. I just consistent. I just love the process and just tried to improve a little bit every day. And I just enjoy. And when I stopped improving, which was like 2018, 2019, I lost that momentum a little bit. And, but until then I just, just tried to, there's always something to work on in triathlon. And I just enjoyed it. And I'm a talker. So I like going out on long training rides and just chatting away. It's, there's not many other jobs that you can do that.
So do you think the age caught up with you, the age in the sport, that is? Do you think it was your body or your mind more so in 2018?
Mind. I was one of the angriest racers out there. I'm like super chill off the course, but as soon as my son came along, I got married, we had our son, I was too content. I'd achieved everything that I wanted to achieve and I wasn't angry. Ask Apo. I used to call him the C word and like yell at people. I was the angriest person on the race course.
We both were super angry. And then
I don't know why.
And
it's just I have a Tassie chip. Like it's from Tasmania. Yeah. Like it's like you just get a chip on your shoulder and you just feel like you need to prove yourself. And then I'd realize I didn't need to prove myself anymore. I don't know.
Funny. I think Steve, you've got the perfect example of every photo of you in a race, especially on the bike. It's just this face of pain. And if you look at the first half of my career, every photo in every race, I'm just scrunched up, just face of pain, just killing myself, whether it was fifth or first or 10th. And then the last 3 years of my career, I'm just like full poker face, relaxed, about to fall asleep in races. So,
my best racing, I didn't overthink anything. In the last few years, I was so analytical and just, I used to just race. I get out of the water behind and I'd just try and rip everyone's legs off and hang on the run. It was very simple. And then it got complicated and Yeah, it's when you lose that, if you overthink it, I think you're maybe on the way out. I think the good guys know how to just go to that place and be happy with it.
Yeah. We were talking, Joe, the other day about how we were in a bit of a golden era too, whereas in Boulder, we would all turn up in Boulder, especially all the Aussies, Kiwis, and a couple of the more jovial Americans, and everyone would just train together. Be like, what are we doing today? Mm. And we'd all just go out and train. And then it got real scientific. Everyone had their intervals to do, and it sort of... I think we got really lucky and had a great time. And I don't know about you, but I feel amazing gratitude for that, being in that era. How do you feel about it looking back?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I look back and some of from when I moved over here in 08 through to really pre-pandemic. Even the couple of years leading into the pandemic, it got very, very serious. But till 15, 16, I used to train and race against my mates, Ben Hoffman, Richie Cunningham, when you were in town, Burkle, Crowey, Chris Lee, all these guys, we'd tear shreds off each other and wouldn't even think about the training next day or what. So we just didn't want to get dropped because we're having a bad day. And then we'll do it all again the next day and just, I don't know. It was so simple. And I think it's really interesting to hear Benny talk. He's like, I love it. I love the very simple, just trying to accumulate some good miles in the legs and build this big, huge aerobic engine. And look, he's so new to it. And I feel like, I don't think he should overcomplicate it. I think what he's doing right now is sort of how we used to train. Just get it done and recover, train hard, recover harder, and do it all again the next day. So it's he reminds me of how we used to train.
I think that's a good note to finish on. As I said, Joe is joining the RPG team, which is going to be exciting now that he's coming back to Australia. Steve, anything you want to plug before we wrap it?
Nah, I've done enough plugging, and I'm sorry I didn't come in with my research or anything. I have been off the sport since the 70.3 Worlds, and I've literally have had my phone off most of the time. And I think I've done about 8 hours of training for a month per week. So looking to get motivated and get back on the podcast and everything and be a normal person again. But it was a bit intense over in Europe. As you said, Joe, there's a lot to it. You look at all these things going on and you can dive real deep, but as soon as you stop being a normal person, it's not really maintainable for some people. And I wish I was more in the era back in the day. I think I would have been very successful, but I still get on the beers after races. It's like the old days. It's very rare. I'm like an old school one stuck in this era. But I definitely don't think during races. That's actually letting me down now because people are thinking too much. I'll be back on board. And I've got nothing to add because not done research.
We said this the other day, but everyone who has a bit of a fail at world champs, it almost, a lot of the top guys, it sets them up for a good one next year. And sometimes they're the biggest lessons. Hey, Joe,
absolutely agree. Before my third place, I think I was outside the top 10. I think I was 11th. I had a shocker. I don't know. What was your 70.3 Worlds before you won?
Well, I DNF'd my first one and then I had a, 5th, 7th, and then the year before 70.3 Worlds had my worst ever. Sort of pulled a bit of...
Exactly.
Ignored my coaches, trained way too much going into it, didn't rest after Cebu, and just was cooked trying to race. And then the next year I made some big adjustments, and you live and learn. So thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
We will wrap it there. Nice is done. Kona's coming up. We'll be back to do another podcast soon, probably with Steve. Danny will be back from holidays. I certainly won't be editing this, so who knows when it'll come out. See you, fellas.
Thanks, mate.
See you guys.
Cheers, thanks.